Radio's revolution and the world's happiest broadcasters continues. Here again, Richard Fatherly.
The timing of Time's June 4th, 1956 edition was just in time for the routine hearings of the Federal Communications Commission. On its docket was the sale of WQAM Miami to Storrs Mid-Continent Broadcasting Company for $850,000. Without the FCC's okay, the sale would be dead in the water. The Time article was a slick piece of journalism. Under Todd's photograph was the caption, "He stops traffic." Add to this the admonition attributed to Kansas City Police Chief Bernard C. Brannan that Storrs' treasure hunt promotion should be banned, FCC commissioners had a widely read publication, which by implication suggested that Storrs' radio stations may not have been operating in the public interest, convenience, and necessity. The WQAM Miami deal was in trouble. It was time for Todd to go to Washington, D.C. Harold Soderlund, Todd's confidant.
If it had to do with a broadcast business, in other words, if you're going to run a top 40 station and you're going to abandon all of the rules that used to apply to a regional station, you're going to be interested in the FCC and its personnel and how to influence them in your favor, or if you're applying for a station. His political interests were all tied to radio and radio stations.
By memorandum dated July 23, 1956, Todd explained to his Storrs colleagues, "I have just completed a very trying 10 days in Washington on the WQAM transfer. The question was not whether the commission would approve the transfer to us, but instead whether the commission would approve the transfer to us without a hearing. The contract to purchase WQAM expired on August 15, 1956.
Midnight, one more night without sleeping. Watching till the morning comes creeping. Green door, what's that secret you're keeping?
There's an old piano and they play it hot behind the green door. Don't know what they're doing, but they laugh a lot behind the green door. Wish they let me in so I could find out what's behind the green door."
Said Todd, "If the commission had failed to act, or if the commission had voted to send the matter to hearing, we would have, in all likelihood, lost the purchase of WQAM. Todd got the FCC's nod to buy WQAM. How that happened rocked the broadcasting industry. He pledged by a notarized affidavit appearing in the July 23, 1956 edition of Broadcasting Telecasting magazine that he would discontinue running his famous promotions on all the Storrs stations, including WQAM, thus sidestepping an FCC hearing and assuring FCC approval of the WQAM sale. The specter of censorship was widely discussed by broadcasters, but the implicit message was this: radio station programming content could have an effect on the licensing process. For that reason, the WQAM controversy had a lasting impact on the Mid-Continent Broadcasting Company and the broadcasting industry. "The truth of the matter," said Todd, "is that we discontinued these contests because they were questioned by the Federal Communications Commission."
You ain't nothing but a hound dog, girl, crying all the time. You ain't nothing but a hound dog, crying all the time. Well, you ain't never caught a rabbit and you ain't no friend of mine.
The WQAM deal now sealed. The station quickly dominated the radio listening habits of South Floridians. At 560 on the AM dial, WQAM's 5,000 watts drenched the Caribbean and much of South Florida with Storrs' Top 40 programming.
Saturday Top 40, May 3rd, 1958.
You put a smile on the dial of your radio. When turn it to 560. So if you want the latest music and news, there's no doubt about the station to choose. WQAM, Miami.
You're tuned to Radio 1 Miami. WQAM survey proved to have more listeners this time of day than all other radio stations in Miami combined.
Named by Todd to manage WQAM was Jack Sandler. An ex-hockey player, he'd covered the bases as well at KOWH Omaha as sports director and salesman, gaining local fame for his Major League Baseball game recreations using a sports ticker and sound effects. Joining Sandler in 1957 was KOWH announcer Kent Burkhart, whose administrative abilities and acquired store-style programming know-how placed him in the position of WQAM program director. WQAM became Todd's radio showpiece. He wrote, "The Miami studios turned out to be absolutely terrific, by far the most attractive of any we have," in a letter to Dale L. Mowdy, Todd's former vice president of engineering. Mowdy had done much of the early studio design work. Also in 1957, the Mid-Continent Broadcasting Company changed its name to the Storrs Broadcasting Company after the sale of Todd's original KOWH Omaha to William F. Buckley's National News Weekly for a reported $822,500, more than 10 times its original purchase price. In his March 28, 1957 memo, Todd wrote, "There were several considerations which made it advisable to sell KOWH. We have had much greater success with our type of operation with full-time stations in larger cities than Omaha. There is a possibility that we may move our home office away from Omaha to Miami." Other factors, he said, made the sale necessary. One of those other factors was Omaha-based Don Burden and KOILAM, the mighty 1290. Harold Soderlund.
He cultivated Todd, oddly enough, something I never could understand. He copied everything the Storrs did, even down to the letterhead. He even got as close to the Storrs' name as he could with the Star Stations, like he called them, the Star Stations. He copied everything that you could possibly copy. But he had a full-time station, and Todd felt that he couldn't win against him in the ratings race. Then they didn't get along after a while.
Come on over, baby, whole lot of shaking going on. Yes, I say, come on over, baby, baby, you can't go wrong. We ain't faking, whole lot of shaking going on. Oh, let's go.
On close examination of Todd's successes, Dale Mowdy becomes a key personality in the development of the Storrs' radio sound, especially in a technical sense. As acquaintances, Todd and Dale shared a common interest in amateur radio as five-meter bootleggers. That is, both of them had operated illegally on the five-meter ham band. By his 16th year, Todd was a licensed amateur radio operator with the call letters W9DYG and operated from the third floor of the family's fashionable Omaha home. He'd built his first crystal set at the age of eight. Todd's sister, Susan, recalls,
"His radio room was directly above my bedroom. When he couldn't raise anyone with his call, he would ask me to come up and help. In my sexiest voice, I would say, 'Calling CQ, calling CQ.' And within seconds, there would be many responses, and I would be dismissed to go back to bed."
It was Dale Mowdy who developed the gadgets used by KOWH to further Todd's programming objectives. A telephone answering device for a Talk to Santa Claus promotion, a device not then manufactured by the telephone industry.
"Hello, this is the KOWH operator. I'll transfer your call to the North Pole."
"Merry Christmas. This is your North Pole operator. Santa is very busy these days, but he wants to talk to you. Would you hold the line a moment? Paging Santa Claus."
"Well, hello there. This is Santa Claus speaking, and I want to wish you a very Merry Christmas. I know exactly what you want to find under the tree on Christmas morning. If you be good, you just might find it there. Thanks for calling, and Merry Christmas!"
An hourly time tone, automatically triggered by the station's in-studio Western Union self-setting clock. An idea which earned Maudie a $50 savings bond in Todd's Best Idea Awards competition.
At the sound of the automatic electronic time tone in Miami, exactly 6 p.m.
It's 9 a.m.
Stand by for a WHB worldwide instant time check. In Tokyo, Japan, it's 10 a.m.
In WHB land, at the tone, exactly 7 p.m.
A modified jukebox mechanism placed at the WHB transmitter site, which played 45 RPM records after midnight. Known to WHB listeners as Silent Sam, it was a forerunner to radio programming automation equipment. According to WHB studio supervisor Roy Nonemaker, the machine was prone to tripping up and once played the same record for some 2.5 hours.
WHB's radar weather eye. Forecasting for Kansas City, fair and mild.
Maudie credits Todd with the idea of using electronic reverberation as a KOWH modulation enhancement. According to Maudie, the echo was Todd's idea, and its subsequent application into broadcasting as a production tool.
Miami, talks with Castro upcoming. A Cuban exile delegation.
Following Maudie's modifications, the floating tremolo of an oil-dampened Hammond organ reverberation system found its way into each of the store's stations. Further, Dale Maudie was a pioneer in the development of studio-to-transmitter site remote control operation at KOWH. Maudie's presence, or that of his designate, was viewed with suspicion by most rank-and-file union technicians, especially at WHB. No doubt about it, WHB was a union shop. Studio supervisor Roy Nonemaker remembers how Todd stepped into a jurisdictional dispute to smooth things over in Kansas City.
Todd was, he was a great guy. He called me old buddy. He always called me old buddy. And he told me, he says, anything you need in the way of equipment, get it.
Todd Storrs was also a pioneer in telephone talk programming, with its early beginnings at WHB. It was Dale Maudie who developed its so-called multi-phone system, enabling the talkmaster and call-in listeners to speak not only with each other, but with out-of-town guests as well. Nightbeat, as it was called, aired Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m., the format was adopted by WQAM Miami and WDGY Minneapolis-St. Paul. Todd Storrs not only pioneered Top 40 music programming, he was an early pioneer in telephone talk programming. By 1956, the five Storrs stations had gutted the ratings of well-established network affiliates while commanding premium rates from national advertisers. Clearly, the networks had been placed in the position of rethinking their future role in radio broadcasting. In January of 1958, Adam Young Incorporated, a national advertising sales representative for radio stations in the top 25 markets, released its study titled The Dynamic Change in Radio. It said the growth of local independent radio over the network affiliate was no longer a trend. It's an accomplished fact. The Young Report observed that until 1952, the top-rated radio stations in the top 25 markets had been network affiliates. But by 1957, the most listened-to stations in 21 of the top 25 markets were now independents, a ratio of 21 to 4. Arguably, Storrs-style programming was the ignition system for changing the way the American people would think about radio.